This is Louisa Clarence-Smith from EG, and I am with EG senior analyst Paul Wellman and London and Oriental partner Mark Cannell. We're here to talk about a new proposed 1.2 million square foot tower in the City of London. Paul, you've been digging around the planning documents. I'll let you kick off with some questions.
Yeah, just start at the beginning, really, and see how you started acquiring buildings a fair while ago. How many kind of did you have to buy to assemble the site?
Well, it all happened a little bit quicker than we were expecting. So we bought the first building, which was 107 Leadenhall Street, in the middle of 2014.
14?
Yeah. And circumstances presented themselves in as much that the adjoining building, number 100 Leadenhall Street, became available about 6 months later. And so we bought it, and it left us with the last remaining piece of the jigsaw, which is 106 Leadenhall Street, which we then bought in around Christmas 2015. Mm-hmm. So we've managed to assemble the full site within about 18 months.
Wow. And but that's it. It was the second site that kind of opened your eyes to the fact that you could assemble as much to go high, essentially.
Yes, exactly that, yeah. So 107 in its own right, I think, was really just the landmass was too small.
Right, yeah.
And we needed to sort of bulk out.
Yeah.
And that's 100 gave us that ability.
I get London has changed a lot in 3 years.
Yeah, it certainly has.
Hasn't it? So I guess that presented challenges, and did plans change at all? Or?
Not really. I mean, we've been... We've been open for business for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And we've been through lots of different cycles. So as far as we're concerned, the current environment has issues, but it's business as normal. So we're keen to push forward.
Great. And I guess this probably won't complete, if all goes well, until 2022. Probably is, would that be fair to say? What time...
So time frame. At the moment, all the lease expires in 2023.
Oh, okay, so this is quite a long term.
If we can bring that forward,
right.
We'd very much like to do that.
Sure, sure.
And that's the reason for getting prepared now.
Can you talk a bit about the new design for the building and how that's changed since you originally envisaged it?
Okay. When we'd assembled the site, we realised that there was some considerable opportunity here to develop. And we all agreed that the correct thing to do was to go and talk to a number of world-renowned architects. And we agreed that we would have an architectural competition. And the winner of that process was Skidmore, Owings & Merrill. Mm-hmm. And they, I'm sure you know, are an outstanding firm and have got incredible experience of building tall buildings. And not least of all, the Burj Khalifa, which is the tallest building in the world, and the new Freedom Tower on the old World Trade Center site in Manhattan. And they put forward some really fantastic ideas. One of the key reasons why they were chosen was that the form that they created, we believe, is timeless, and it's of world quality, and we're very proud of it. We're very excited about it. The design has changed from the competition design, mm-hmm. Because we have had to consider our neighbours and the impact on the skyline, and we're keen to make sure that that's been properly curated. So the design that we're putting forward so far has had 18 months of hard work in making sure that we're producing something that we think is fit for purpose.
The City of London are very keen on their model, that they kind of show wind and sunlight and all the rest of it. So I imagine it's had rigorous testing through that process.
We're going through a very rigorous testing process at the moment. The building has already been through the SOM wind tunnel in Chicago, and so far the early reports are very positive. But you're right, the city they've had some bad experiences, I think it's fair to say. I shan't mention names, but we're very keen that we have a positive impact on the environment, not a negative one.
Yeah.
But you'll have seen there's an EIA scoping document which is extremely detailed and concentrates on wind and solar and so on. So.
And obviously you've noticed that it narrows as it goes high. Is that because of sight lines similar to the Leadenhall?
No, we are the last remaining undeveloped site in the tower cluster, and the reason the tower cluster is there is because it doesn't. There are none of the London verified views are impacted by that area of land. The reason that it tapers is because we've wanted to be deferential to St Paul's Cathedral. Because there are, although it's not a verified view, there's an important view from Fleet Street.
Yeah.
And we wanted to make sure that the impact on that, on the St Paul's Sky Gap, was as minimal as possible. So that's what we've done.
And are you going to name it 100 Leadenhall?
At the moment, the plan is to call it 100 Leadenhall.
No doubt. There'll be a nickname.
I'm sure there will be. But that's the objective at the moment.
And would we probably think that the insurance market will kind of take up space?
I would be very surprised if they weren't interested.
Yeah.
And although the intention at the moment is to proceed speculatively, I'd be very surprised if once we started the process, as we got nearer to the start date, that one of the major insurance companies would be interested in taking a pre-let.
Yeah.
We're also seeing increasing demand from occupiers in the sort of tech and service office occupier market. Have you adapted your plans at all to think about how you might appeal to those kind of occupiers, or are you still going more for the financial, insurance, legal market?
Well, I mean, the whole world is going through a major change at the moment in terms of workplace, and one of the attractions of the design is that we provide large trading floors at ground floor through to fifth floor, mm-hmm. but the floors get smaller and smaller as you go to the top of the building, and all of the upper floors, and in fact the lower floors, are subdivisible. So we're anticipating that, first of all, there's a lot of flexibility in terms of who might be interested in the building, but secondly, we're going to ensure that the things that we provide within the building will be in line with what people want. Having said that, 7 years is quite a long way off, and a lot can happen. But at the moment, the building has flexibility to be able to provide those sort of services that we think tenants will want.
Are you cautious at all about the outcome of Brexit?
Yeah, of course I'm cautious about it. And but as I said earlier, we've been through lots of different cycles, and I happen to think that London stands strong as a world financial centre. And we wouldn't be pressing on with this if we didn't feel confident about the future.
I understand you primarily represent sort of Hong Kong private money. Is that essentially going to be the capital behind this project?
Yes. Yeah. At the moment, the money behind this is from a Hong Kong listed company called Lai Sun.
Yeah.
They're very experienced. Property is their main business in Hong Kong. But they also have a lot of experience in retail, entertainment and leisure through restaurants. And I'm hoping that some of their experience in Hong Kong, which allows for, if you like, mixed-use buildings at their very best in Hong Kong, we can bring some of that to London.
Do you know if they'll also be sourcing any finance for the project?
I don't think so at the moment, but we're a long way from making that decision.
I know you were set up in 1995. You've always come with that sort of expertise, getting sort of Hong Kong money into London and the UK. I mean, how have you seen that appetite change since you founded London Oriental?
So, I think it's fair to say that the appetite from the Far East as a whole has always been quite consistent. At the moment, we're seeing a lot of inward investment, particularly from Hong Kong and China. perhaps think quite a lot of that is being driven by a change in currency. But I also happen to think that people from that part of the world still view London as a safe haven. For me, that's not necessarily a reason to invest, but it certainly seems to be. It seems to be the appetite at the moment. The people that we have co-invested with and we invest with, they're very much here for the long term. So the people that we, for example, Lysan, we've known for over 35 years. So this is not something that's just happened, you know, out of the blue. So there's been a long discussion period and so on.
That's your second project, right?
Yeah, we had we bought 36 Queen Street in 2011. When the market was very different to how it is now, very little available bank funding, and that was a huge success. So, and we still own that. But I think that did give Lysan the confidence to up the ante a little bit. So
it's interesting that they've sort of decided to put their money into a new development rather than just see if they can go and buy the Gherkin, which other companies have done.
Like them, we prefer to be developers because when you're buying the end investment, the development profit has been taken out by somebody else. So at the end of the day, we're here to make money. So we think this is the best way to do it. So taking on the risk is we're not afraid to do that.
And do you think it's also the time in the market to invest in that sort of trophy building? I mean, we've seen obviously trophy buildings sell for premium prices. Take it as a reason you're looking to do this now rather than?
To be honest, I'd be a seller of a trophy building now, not a buyer. We don't tend to invest in trophy assets. We like to create trophy assets, but we don't invest in. We'd far rather take the development risk.
And I mean, long term, and it's sometimes a long way off. Once you have developed it out and filled it, would you be a long term holder of the asset? Do you think, or do you think it would be something that you'd sell?
Hard to say, but certainly strategically, Lysan and ourselves have always been long term investors. So at the moment, I'd say that was unlikely.
And I know you've done things around the UK. I imagine it's going to be your primary focus now, but what else is London and Oriental working on or planning to do?
So our principal focus at the moment is London. We are currently building 111 Cannon Street, which you may have seen, which is very exciting. That's due for completion summer next year. Mm-hmm. It was a very unloved building for a very long time, and proud to say probably the least attractive building on Cannon Street, and we're now creating something, I hope, which is worthy of the location. So, and that also is a sign of our commitment to the market. So we're always looking for opportunities. We're looking to buy right now. But again, we're looking at development-led opportunities and value-add rather than investments. Mm-hmm. We're also in mid-construction on Buckingham Green, which is very exciting. That's coming to completion in June 2018. 65 apartments and about 130,000 square feet of mixed-use commercial, retail and offices. And we're extremely excited to see it starting to take shape. So yeah, we've got quite a lot on.
And that's, you stripped that back to the shadow core,
Buckingham Green comprises of three different buildings.
Yeah.
The tower, which was a 15-story building developed in 1978. We've taken that back to the frame, added a floor, but we've demolished the other podium buildings and we've built two brand new buildings on the site. So, yeah, it comprises of three separate components.
Have you found it sort of easier to access development sites at the moment? Because a lot of domestic investors and developers have found it difficult to compete with that Asian money benefiting from sort of the currency play.
Development sites are very difficult to find right now. And that's largely because the market is paying too much for them. So finding value is quite difficult. I think it is fair to say, though, that the availability of bank finance from Asia does give us a competitive edge.
And does Lyson, don't they have an office at the moment in the UK?
No.
Do you think they could set one up at the top of your building?
I think it's unlikely that Lyson will ever have a representative office in the UK, but it would be a perfect location.
Do you know if they're looking to invest more in developments in London or the UK?
Most definitely.
Now, are you talking to any other Hong Kong parties at the moment? Are you finding there's a lot of appetite to work with you on developments?
Yeah, but we have a very loyal stable of our co-investors and investors, and we're not looking to expand that base.
And a lot of talk about restrictions on mainland Chinese capital.
Correct.
Being invested outside of mainland China. Are you seeing that have an impact at all on your base?
Definitely. I think a lot of the money that you're seeing investing in London at the moment is as a direct result of that.
Okay.
And it's an opportunity for them to export some of the capital now before it's restricted.
Going forward, do you see that becoming increasing concern, or what's your kind of
Not really, because for me, we're not competing in that market. So I'm quite happy for people to pay big prices for completed developments. So,
and where do you think London stands from those sort of investors' view compared to other Western European cities? Do you think we're still sort of the best place to invest from their point of view?
I would say that London has always been at the top of the list for people investing, in particular from the Far East. I think it's partly because the market here is very transparent. That people are very familiar with the legal system, given that the UK law is the base, the foundation of Hong Kong law. So from that respect, it's very easy to understand. There's a huge availability of information here, and it's a familiar place to do business, and it's tax benign, so it's very easy to invest.
So I think 50% of buildings in London, office buildings currently under construction, are already pre-let. And do you see that it's going to be that supply constraint?
Yeah, I mean, it's the situation for me at the moment is unusual in that rental values don't seem to be increasing, but there is still a very limited supply of new accommodation. And you're quite right, a lot of that has been taken up through pre-lets. So I don't see that situation changing anytime soon.
Would you need the pre-let to kind of kick off construction? Would there be a percentage where you would need to
I think
occupy
any project
you?
Of this size, there would be a huge confidence brought to the table by engaging in a pre-let. So, I don't think so. We've got the stakeholder and public consultation process starting this week.
That kicks off now,
so,
yeah.
There's a proper public consultation next week,
yeah,
on the 16th and 17th. Mm-hmm. We've already been round to see most of our neighbours, and so most people know what's being planned.
What's coming, yeah.
In particular, the church. And we're quite excited about the relationship with the church, because they've been very supportive of what we're doing, mm-hmm. given that we're right on their front doorstep. But the design of the building has given us the opportunity to open up the west transom, which has never been seen before.
So we're talking using that, isn't it, to run through.
And they were very excited about it. So the church, which is a Grade 1 listed building, in fact I think it's only one of two buildings that survive both the Fire of London and the Blitz.
Yeah.
And so the way that we're hoping to bring this through, there'll be a public access through from behind in a little open public realm here, so you'll be able to sit and enjoy looking at the back of the church. So, yeah, they've been very good. And in fact, we're holding our public consultation in the church, so with their full support, which is I suppose not quite what I was expecting, but I'm really pleased.
This must be the biggest development you've done, especially in the city.
Yes, it is, yeah.
It's been a bit of a learning process.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair comment. There's an awful lot that you have to a lot of hoops you have to go through, quite rightly, for something that's as significant as this.
Yeah.
And you have to deal with an awful lot of people, from historic England to the Dean Chapter of St Paul's, historic royal palaces, the GLA, City Corporation, the London Advisory Committee, and the list goes on and on. I'm hopeful that we'll have everybody's support to drive this forward.